Do you like horror movies? Do you like cocktails? Do you like cocktails while you watch horror movies?
Oh boy, do we have a surprise for you. Cocktails from the Crypt is finally here. You can get a copy of our new recipe book, 60 Terrifying Concoctions, inspired by your favorite horror movies, right now, wherever books are sold.
Learn how to make the Drag Mai Tai to Hell, the Negroni Nomicon.
Surprise your friends with a Jason X-inspired slushie.
Get sloshed drinking a Texas Chainsaw Margarita, or six.
And why not blow your brains at the back of your head with the Killbot Kamikaze? Thank you. Have a nice day.
You can learn how to drink. You can learn how to make these drinks and more in Cocktails from the Crypt, available wherever books are sold, like Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay, this infomercial bit has been really fun, but seriously, one, thank you so much to everybody who has pre-ordered a copy of Cocktails from the Crypt. And if you are looking for a gift for the horror person in your life and you have no idea what else to get them, Cocktails from the Crypt is here to help them punch up every Friday movie night and turn it into a graveyard smash.
Plus, the cover's embossed and it looks great on your coffee table.
No, oh, Kim's still stuck in infomercial land, guys. I'm sorry. I think she's gone forever.
It's purple.
You can get Cocktails from the Crypt right now, wherever books are sold. Or you can head over to nofspodcast.com/go. There's links for everything.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Welcome back to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
And this week we're going full detective mode. We're talking about 1999's The Bone Collector, one of 10-year-old Kim's favorite movies.
I cannot believe I saw this movie when it came out.
That has been the fun part about this podcast, about we like, oh yeah, there's this movie. I remember loving this movie, rented it a bunch, watched it a lot as a kid. It'll be great to revisit as an adult, and you realize I had no adult supervision.
You're like, this explains a lot.
Yeah. There are so many scenes doing close-ups on a melted woman's body.
Yeah, particularly the melted woman scene, and they kept fucking showing it. They cut to it like 8 times, and I was like, I was 10.
Yeah, this movie is 7. But for moms. And they got away with it by casting Denzel and Angelina Jolie. And they were like, we'll get behind this.
It's some pretty fucking dreamy leads for a crime thriller.
Yeah. I mean, it's not unlike Seven. It's a criminal procedural, a crime thriller. We're in the mind of a serial killer trying to figure out what makes them tick. We're following criminal profilers who are also forensic investigators.
And a street cop.
And then we're also visiting grisly crime scenes.
I think it focuses less on like the psychology of the killer, and it's more about trying to solve the puzzles the killer leaves so that they can catch the victims in time.
Yeah. I was obsessed with the trailer for this movie. It was ahead of a bunch of movies I owned. It was on TV a lot. I thought it just looked like the coolest goddamn movie in the world.
And I bet that movie would cut a really good trailer because it is so full of Dutch angles. We are shooting
Dutch angles where they don't need them.
We are shooting at Denzel Washington in his hospital bed that they have in his apartment from like the corner of the ceiling, and then they're shooting up from the floor.
There's that fucking incredible shot where we're watching the bone collector kidnap a new victim, and they're like, it's a struggle, and they're like, oh my god, we gotta get out of this cab, and then we zoom out through the city streets into Denzel Washington's apartment.
I loved it.
It was incredible.
It was great.
We would not see something that insane until like the third Sam Raimi Spider-Man. It was wild. And from a director who's
but
not
still,
exactly,
mostly a cut and dry crime
thriller. Yeah, no, we love a good crime thriller. We love a good cop procedural, especially when it's a cop procedural that takes a forensic investigator and makes him like the god of a criminal investigation.
Yeah, so I was thinking about it while we were watching it, and I was like, this is just reverse Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, yeah. They even have, like, a lot of those, like, head-on shots where we're staring directly in the camera, talking about how something's important, and I believe in you, and you got this.
Yeah, but instead of the guy helping you solve the crime being a cannibal, it's a very successful cop.
Yeah, because she is essentially, Angelina Jolie is essentially the Clarice Starling
character. Yeah, 100%.
She even has her tortured backstory. She doesn't have this, you know, Silence of the Screaming of the Lambs or anything. It's just that she discovered her father's body after he committed suicide. And then, which is real cruel.
And then she got into cop work, or do you think she was already a cop?
No, we established that she was a teen model.
Oh.
And that she got out of that. And then she becomes a police officer.
Yeah, but we don't know where in her timeline her dad killed himself.
I guess that's true.
Was she like, now I'll become a cop?
I mean, maybe.
Seems like it's okay on the psyche.
her move is to become, like, her goal is to become, like a youth police officer. Like, she's focusing more on, like, truancy and, like, keeping kids out of gangs and drugs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, you have an aptitude for evidence. You stopped a train.
She took some photos.
Like... Yeah. Yeah, that was it. He was just like, you took some incredible photos here. Like, with that $4 camera? Like, the cardboard disposable camera? They're like, we've never seen crime photos this good.
The thing he was just looking for a protege. he was auditioning a protege, and he found Angelina Jolie.
He's essentially assembling the team at the beginning of the movie. He just, like, he's got his cop buddies who are gonna, like, run defense for him against Michael Rooker, who's, like, you know, definitely not, but maybe the serial killer in the movie.
I never suspected him.
No, because that's the obvious move.
Yeah, but I just thought he was an asshole.
Yeah, you know who it could have been when
you're
first.
He was like, "This is my case."
When you're first watching it, the
how
person
dare you
think
solve
it
from your bed
might be is Al Bundy's like assistant.
I thought you were gonna say Al Bundy, and I was like, "No, he would
you're
not."
Like, you take that back.
He was a great man.
No, he like his like slicked backed haired assistant who's.
Oh, yeah, he's in scenes, and he's not really a full character.
It doesn't really pan out.
He's just there sometimes.
But especially on Angelina Jolie's fire escape. What's her character's name?
Amelia. I wrote them down.
I can't see that from
just
here.
Just peek.
My microphone's blocking it.
Just peek around it.
So, yeah, he's on Amelia's fire escape for no fucking reason after somebody has, like, knocked on her door ominously and, like, maybe snuck into her apartment because she just left the fucking door wide open when she walked away to see where it was.
Yeah, if you're a cop and you're breaking into another cop's house, you would probably think twice before doing it because they're armed and are likely to be...
Oh, yeah, they definitely got guns.
Pointing the gun at you.
They've got guns. They've got training. They've been up all night drinking.
Somebody asked them to cut off someone's hands that day.
Yeah. Okay, so the bone collector is a taxi driver. We established this in the very beginning of the movie. He's a taxi driver who...
Do you think he's a taxi driver, or do you think that the taxi is just the modus operandi? Because I don't take him as he's actually a taxi driver.
I don't think he's licensed. I don't think he's a taxi driver until times are tough and he's like, ugh, I guess I gotta do actual taxi work. He's got to get in the mindset of a taxi guy. No, I think he is because
no, I don't think so.
You can get ticketed for not having like a license. Oh wait, doesn't he get pulled over in the middle of the movie?
Yeah, because he doesn't have the fare thing on properly.
Oh, because he doesn't know what he's doing.
Because he's not a real taxi driver.
There's
also like... that cab is suited up, and don't taxi drivers. Like, all the cabs are owned by a cab company. So, like, you and you're not in the same cab every single time. It's just, like, whatever cab you get. And his are, like, souped up so that you can't unlock the back window or you'll fucking cut your hands up.
There's a yes and no on that one. So, you can own your own cab. And oftentimes, people will split on cabs. You'll have, like, a couple people. Like, the small business, the brick and mortar store is the cab. And... if I remember correctly, the thing that's expensive.
This is
going to
be important when we solve this crime later.
Yeah. the thing that's expensive about having a cab is having like the token or something, like the essentially like the license to own the cab. Mm. It's like crazy stupid expensive, especially in New York. It's kind of a racket. It's
you know. Uber drivers just need Google Maps and they're good to go.
Yeah, Google Maps. You take a couple photos of the outside of your car and then you're approved and ready to go to be taken advantage of. Yeah, no, I don't think he's a real taxi driver, because it is definitely like, you know, this taxi cab's 100% death proof, but you gotta be sitting in this
seat. You
gotta
be sitting in my seat.
I love that he goes to the effort of having the like the lock door buttons.
I know, he didn't just remove them, he replaced
them
with like knives.
Yes. That's the scene that I remember so vividly from the trailer. Is people screaming, trying to get out of the taxi cab, trying to unlock the door, but oh my god, I cut my finger. Like, so good. Like, as a kid, I was like, this is cinema, baby. And like rewatching it now as an adult too, this is like a Larry Cohn script, right? Like, this is like Ambulance. We're like, there's cabs all over the city, and you never think twice before getting into one. But who's the driver? Where's he taking you? This could be the last ride of your life.
I was really scared for Amelia just in some innocuous scene when she's going back to her apartment because she got out of a cab.
Yeah.
And I was like,
you were like, oh, the door foreshadowing. Opens. She takes cabs. I'm like, Kim, it's New York. Everybody takes cabs.
I was like, all right.
That's the sinister part about it. You never know. Unless the guy's got like a cartoon character on a noose hanging from the
unless
the
there's
rear
knives
view.
For locks.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so he's just picking up these random people, torturing them, killing them, leaving their bodies with like weird evidence for them to find him, essentially. The first pile of evidence they find, like, first off, somebody reports this body because there's just like a hand sticking out of the gravel.
This is such a great image. That's the most vivid thing I remember is that crime scene.
If this movie was more popular, that would be the Mondo poster. Like when they put out like
yes,
a new poster for the
absolutely.
Movie. Absolutely. Just a hand sticking out of
with the wedding
gravel.
Band.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. The wedding band is sticking on like the bone that's like ripped out of his or just, you know, protruding from his severed finger.
Yeah, so
does he really collect bones?
I was like let's talk on the bone collector aspect. He takes everybody's like first knuckle digit of their pointer finger.
Yeah.
But he also harvests a bone from elsewhere. Like he's also harvesting cuz all of the victims have like a chunk taken out of them.
Is it a bone that he's taking a why does he do that?
Like, don't double dip.
Like, okay, well, here's the...
Take one token, you fuck.
The other thing, too, is that he... Like, once we get to the end of the movie and we discover who the killer is and why he's doing this, like so many killers in 80s slashers, he's doing too much. Right?
Like, he's too busy or like
this is it's just such a complicated plan. So like it's all a revenge plot to spoiler alert guys for a movie from 1999, the killer, his real target is Denzel Detective Lincoln Rhyme, because he it was an expert witness on a crime that he got convicted for, a series of crimes.
It was just basically a cop who did really shoddy work and then tried to cover it up by faking evidence.
Yeah, and then he went to jail for 6 years and he was tortured the whole time that he was there. And now
he's... Do you know what they do to cops in prison?
Yeah, but now he's got this like 10, 15 year plan where he's been killing people and leaving evidence, but they also haven't noticed until these new rash of murders.
Yeah, like you think he would step it up.
Like he is like
he's like they're not seeing my clues.
Well, he's like every YouTuber or every struggling artist, like nobody appreciates my work. I'm not getting any recognition. I'm just toiling in the dirt here, but one day I'm finally going to get a break.
New York has so many murders that just like people showing up without a single part of their pointer finger is not something to coincidence.
Not even a blip on the radar. It's like, ew, gross.
We're not tagging that keyword on the database.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, he has to spoil who the killer is. Like, it's a tech who works on Denzel Washington's like hospital equipment.
What does he do? Like, he has to come and like change the battery? Like,
I don't know. I think he just comes in every once in a while and calibrates it. He's just like beep boop 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 boop. Yep, still working pretty good. Here's a bill for $100,000 or $100, you know. But he's got access to him.
I know, like...
In the beginning of the movie...
Smother him with a pillow.
Yeah. Like, in the beginning of the movie, there's nobody around. It's just, like, him, Queen Latifah, who's his nurse, and no one else. Like, the rest of the movie, his apartment's full of cops. But yeah. In the beginning, it's just, like, he could reach over and smother him
at
any time.
Yeah, like, the only argument against that I could say is that the whole point of his, well, some of his kills, is that the police have a chance to save the victim.
Okay.
Like, it's kind of like a Saw situation where they're kind of in, like, a death trap.
Yeah.
And the killer's not present for the death. He just, like, takes a hunk of bone, takes two hunks of bone, and then leaves the crime scene. And then he leaves clues for the police and, like, a deadline, essentially, that victim is either going to get steamed to death or rats or...
Well, there was also no...
And sometimes he doesn't follow that rule.
Yeah, right? Because I was going to say the rats. There was no, like, hey, heads up. This guy's going to get eaten by rats at 4 o'clock tomorrow. It was just, this guy's dead. Like, you.
He's like, there's too many rats in New York. I can't keep them off him.
Look, I did my best. Okay, guys. Like, this is a bigger problem. You know, actually, this is a good opportunity. Maybe we should take the time to talk about these fucking rats. You know, he shifts focus. He's like, look, I was really mad at Lincoln Rhyme. We got bigger fish to fry at this point. Okay, you, me, and the rest of the citizens. We're going to have a whacking day on all these rats.
He is taking them to decayed areas of the city.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he's like, we need to develop here.
Oh, like, I'm going to take you on a tour.
Yeah,
of
like
all the
this old
spots.
Slaughterhouse, this old subway station. Like, this is prime real estate we're not using.
Do you think he's been doing this long enough that a few of those first murders are in areas that have been gentrified? And he's like, oh, I mean.
His clues are still there under the new apartment building. But yeah, so I think that it's purely to make him guilty of death, like make him guilty of the thing that he was ultimately convicted of, right? Because wasn't he accused of his bad cop stuff getting people killed?
Yeah, but I guess the whole idea here is like you got blood on, like you're saying I had blood on my hands, even though I'm pretty sure I'm innocent. But you truly have blood on your hands. Mm-hmm. This is all your fault. And you think you're so fucking smart, but all the evidence and the killer have been right under your nose this whole time and you couldn't fucking figure it out.
But he is really just giving this detective the greatest puzzle of his life. Like, he is having a time. He is loving it.
This is what gave him a new zest for life.
Yes, like, he is just, like, in his element. He's got all his bros back around. He's got this hot new protege.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's living his best life. I mean, apart from the not able to move stuff.
Yeah, apart from the fact that he's a quadriplegic, yeah. And that he has signed, like, a do not resuscitate. Also,
please kill me now.
Give me that death serum.
Yeah,
clock's ticking on this movie.
He's very pro-euthanasia.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, every afternoon he has these horrible seizures, and they're not sure which seizure is going to put him into a vegetative state, and he's trying to avoid that entirely by just checking out now. It's
sad.
Great. It's
very sad.
It is sad.
Not a situation I would ever want to find myself in.
No, of course not.
We had to actually rewind the movie a couple of times at around that point because we both got lost in the sauce of, like, what should I put in my will?
Yeah. These are questions you got to ask yourself as an adult. There's also this extra wrinkle, and I don't want to go into this too much because I just watched this documentary at Sundance called Life After about assisted suicide that really made me think about it in a completely different way. It seems like the disabled community who this is kind of for, nobody wants it. Everybody's saying this is a bad idea and that we should reverse course. Like, we're opening the floodgates to allow this pretty much everywhere, and there's a large group of people saying that this is a huge mistake.
I still think there's cases where it is a plausible choice.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like in situations like Lincoln Rhyme here, this character, like he's trying to avoid becoming going into a vegetative mm-hmm. state.
Like, couldn't he like set up some kind of situation that if I were to go into this state, I do not want to continue living?
Probably,
but he can't consent to the euthanasia at that point. Is that
there's the fucking problem? And, like once, also at this point, it's totally illegal.
This
like
is why you have a loved one who can, you know, speak for you.
And this is why he's trying to train a protege.
This is the real reason you get married, so you don't end up a vegetable and stuck as a vegetable.
Yeah, guys, seriously, get married so you can have someone close to you that is willing to kill you.
That's what's important in a relationship.
You need that pull the plug insurance.
This is what they mean when they say you need to establish boundaries. Yeah, but his new protege is going to be Angelina Jolie. You know? Like, that's a whole, like,
he was like, yo, you get to be my eyes and ears. And have also unfettered my executioner. Unfettered access to every single crime scene. Like, so much so that she is the first one on each scene and that the cops hold back from processing.
Like, let her go in. We got, like, because they essentially, in their mind, they're sending in Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Like, he is this, like, criminal profiler or criminal profiler extraordinaire. There, I got it out.
Mm-hmm.
And also CSI Miami expert. CSI New York.
As far-fetched as it felt while we were watching it, it does make sense in terms of, like, capturing as much evidence from the crime scene as you can before it's ultimately contaminated by, like, 1,000 police boots.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, except it's so incredibly cruel to send this woman in day one to the worst crime scene she's probably ever going to see.
Yes.
And then, like, it's like, hey, also, we were there in time to maybe rescue her. Couldn't get there in time. Had to listen to her die.
There was not a single pulse check on the neck of a victim, I just want to say. Like, I know that guy was eaten by rats, but he looked pretty fresh. Like, there might have been a chance there was a pulse there.
Nobody was looking. They're like, yeah, well, better start processing.
Like, time to process the scene. And he's, like, conscious. He's like,
please.
Thanks for getting the rats off me.
But she can't hear him because she's on the phone with Lincoln Rhyme.
She's like, yeah, he's dead.
He's like, don't worry, I got this. It's quiet. It's okay. It's okay. Don't listen. But so day one, he puts her into this crime scene and he's like, you're doing great. I need you to like take some photos. I need you to like look over here. What do you see? What is this? Bag that up. Put this in a container. Also, gonna need you to cut these ladies' hands off. Like, we need those handcuffs. They are key evidence. And before anybody else comes in, gonna need you to take that bone saw out of that case. Cut off them pretty little hands.
I need you to bone collect for me.
Yeah. Denzel's the real
villain. Yeah, he ends up being the killer.
Can you imagine the end of this movie?
And he's doing it by, like, sending Angelina Jolie on missions, and she doesn't realize that she's, like, perpetrating these murders.
Incredible.
I'm a great cop.
I would have loved that. But yeah, they got a good dynamic in the movie. I mean...
Okay. Let's talk about their dynamic, because I love both of them in this movie. Denzel is acting everybody... to shame from that hospital bed.
I know. All he's got is his head and one finger.
Phenomenal. He is so good. And Angelina Jolie is, like, so emotive, and she is perfect as this, like, green cop who's in over her head, but it's kind of something that she's, like, destined to do because she's very good at it and she's got a natural knack for it. You can see that she's in her element, but it's still very new to her. I don't know. There's just lots of layers to both of their characters, and it's really great. But then they try to set up this, like, love interest thing, like, pretty late in the movie. And I'm like, ew, this is like a trainer and a trainee situation.
Yeah.
Some could argue almost like a father-daughter situation.
Yeah, I don't believe for a minute that it's a romantic relationship. I think it's...
There was a lot of, like, hand touching in like...
This is the.
It was very intimate.
I guess. And, like, this is the problem with movies. Right?
I love.
Where they're just like, they have to fall in love. If they don't fall in love, why are we here?
I love love as much as the next person. And I love when people fall in love. And I like to watch that sometimes. But not in my bone collecting movie.
No. And
like, why can't they just be fucking successful partners who just, like, have a mutual respect for one another and their proficiency at collecting bones?
Isn't that kind of where we where we fall at the end of the movie, though? Like, isn't that essentially where
we
are?
No, they're definitely going to date.
You think so?
They're going to have a weird dating relationship.
Oh, all that love that kindles over Christmas? This movie just, like, surprise, it's Christmas now. Which is great, because it's on my Christmas movies for Grinch's list now on Letterboxd. I'm gonna watch it every December.
The Christmas is such a, like, it's almost like a post-credit scene of Christmas.
Yeah, that's all I need. That's enough.
It's like in Jumanji, when we go back to the everything's normal, we finish the game, and then they get to meet Kirsten Dunst and her little brother again.
Yep.
In this alternate reality, and it's Christmas.
Yep, I love it.
And you're like, it's a Christmas movie.
There's 45 seconds of Christmas in Goodfellas, and we watch it every single goddamn year.
Yeah, but that movie's got great Christmas vibes. I like crime thrillers. I just want to say, I like them.
I do too.
They're such a great way to shut off. Because you really...
Don't let the fucking directors hear that.
No, I mean shut off from, like, the world. Like, to lose yourself in a movie for 2 hours. Because you get engrossed in the mystery. Like, they're very easy to fall into.
Yeah.
Even a bad crime thriller, like, you have me until the end.
Yeah,
You know what I mean?
Always. I mean, it does help when there's a mystery element to it, yeah. Because you're like, oh, I gotta pay attention. I'm gonna miss something if I hear... What's this pile
of
sand?
Well, I think that's the thriller element.
What's Luis Guzman doing here? Holy shit.
I love him.
Luis Guzman's the best.
He's so good. He's such a light in everything he shows up in.
Yeah.
He just brightens the room.
He's the best. But do you think, getting back to this movie, do you think that it's a fun reveal or ultimately kind of silly that the whole movie is just based on a book? Well, like, first off, the movie's adapted from a novel.
Okay, so the movie's based on a book, but the...
But also the book.
In the movie, the kills are based on a book.
Yeah, and Lincoln Rhyme is just like, I've read thousands of books. I'm the smartest goddamn person you've ever met. I mean, I don't expect him to have an encyclopedic knowledge of every pulp novel ever written, but yeah, like, it's a little strange that
he
all of a sudden...
He is a working Wikipedia.
And why hasn't that killer just gone to every library in New York and just stolen that book? I guess he wants them to be able to find the book, right?
He's taking the scenic route here. He's doing things at his own pace.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's leaving the microscopic clues.
Yes. that they have to, like, turn into puzzles.
The direct path doesn't interest him. He could just smother Denzel with a pillow. But does he? He does not.
What do you think he's going to do? Like, let's say he succeeds at every turn here. At the end of the movie, does he just, like... Like, leave New York? Like, does he just, like, walk away? Or does he get killed by the cops?
I think, like, he was blinded with an obsession to get revenge.
Okay.
I don't think he was thinking beyond the revenge.
Mm.
Honestly, I think there's a lot probably lost in the book.
I thought you were going to say, I think there's a lot we could learn from him.
The thing to take away here, no, is because I think... There are elements about the killer that aren't deeply explored, because something that's very cool in the kills is that he utilizes a lot of vintage stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he's very obsessed with, like, old shackles, mm-hmm. and old spaces that have closed down in, like, 1898 and 1910.
Yeah.
And the stuff he uses in his murders are vintage.
Mm-hmm.
And the book that he's basing his crimes off is like a really old series of mystery novels.
Yes.
So, like, I want to know more about his obsession with history and why history is so important to him.
I agree. There's something missing there that I'm sure is in the novel.
Yeah, like, we're missing some psychology of the killer that I would have really appreciated.
And it's probably about how New York is bad.
But they were too busy making sure that Denzel and Angelina Jolie held hands for a minute.
I mean,
had a Christmas mistake.
Gotta break a few eggs. You know?
But yeah, I think the vintage stuff was really cool.
Yeah.
That's such a unique thing to a killer. And it's not easy. That's a lot of work to do the research for that, but also to acquire those things.
He had all the time in the world to read those books while he was in jail, I bet. Also, I think you're absolutely right, because there's that whole, it's not really a B plot, it's just like a couple lines of dialogue where we have one of Denzel's friends is at the house. He's a doctor. This is the person that's going to supply him with the life-ending medicine. And there's a falcon at his window, and he's talking about how there's more of these birds all over the city. Something about the old architecture and buildings, mostly abandoned, I think, where these birds of prey, these predators, are hanging out. And there's some sort
of... That's pretty good.
Some sort of kinship that this old bedridden detective has with these new birds, right? And I think you're right. Like, I think there's definitely probably some exploration of the darker parts of New York. Just through, like, all the old-timey stuff. Because it does seem like Denzel's piecing a lot of this stuff together based on crimes and crime stories from a lot of the locations they go to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the bones of an industrial person. An industrialite? What was that? What's the... some titan of industry at the time that they found him in the bowels of the building.
Oh yeah, I forgot about all that stuff.
Yeah, there's like it's like social upheaval or something, you know, like it clearly maybe mirroring the killer's story as well, where he has this person who's been persecuted who's now like killing the person that put him in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the killer we don't meet is a lot smarter than the killer we meet.
Yeah, because once we meet him, he's just like, I'm mad. You
know? Yeah,
like, that's
and
it.
It's just like, you've been doing a lot of brooding, though. Like, I want to crack that. I want to break that stuff down.
We needed just one scene where...
Maybe we should just read the book.
That's not a bad idea.
Actually, when I was... I took a quick Wikipedia-ing of the book before we started recording.
Was this the first of a series?
It's a fucking series of books.
But
and they
was
all
this
have
the first?
Spooky-ass titles.
Do they?
So I'm going to be reading them all.
Okay, so I did not do a lot of research.
Providing I like the first one.
But I did see that they were... there was a proposed sequel that they wanted to do.
Movie sequel?
Yeah, and that it never ended up happening, obviously, but the writer had suggested that they use The Skin Collector as the most direct sequel to the first book.
I don't know why Bone Collector is like cool and Skin Collector is gross, but that's the verdict.
Yeah, so this is obviously like in the wake of James Patterson, right? Like this was his Alex Cross. My Lincoln Rhyme is going to be also like my Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, because him and Amelia are recurring characters in the book series.
Okay.
I don't know if they're like the lead characters or they've just like...
Sometimes they go off and do different missions. Sometimes they come together.
But I'm going to check those out.
That's not a bad idea. That'd be fun. Something else that I noticed, just looking at like facts of the movie, which... it's not, like, super mind-blowing or anything. Like, there was some concern with Columbia, I think, who's distributing the movie. They basically, like, sold half the rights to somebody else just to try and cut losses.
Why do movies end up with such weird rights?
and it was distribution. They sold half the distribution to somebody else. So this is before the movie even came out.
It, like, a international and domestic thing?
I didn't look that far into it. But like, all I'm getting at is that there was some concern that they wouldn't get their money back.
Oh, okay.
It was a... $48 or a $50 million budget. It made $150 million at the box office, which I was like, wow, that's a lot for 1999 for this really sort of gritty crime thriller.
Denzel gets butts in seats, and he does not even move a finger in this movie, in seats.
he's got his own butt in that seat the whole movie. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, wow, yeah, that's a lot for that time. Like, crime thrillers now would not get that much. And I was like... how much did Nosferatu make? Nosferatu made $175 million.
Wow.
And we're walking around talking about it like it's the goddamn biggest
thing ever. I've been talking about that dong for months.
I mean, at the time of this recording, that movie is still in the theater. It's like Valentine's Day. That movie's still in the theater.
Nosferatu is a good Valentine's movie, though.
Yeah, I know. But you'd like, for 2 months, it was able to sort of, well, maybe not 2 months, but like close to 2 months, it's able to stay in the theater. Mm. Good for that movie. And it made $175 million.
I wonder how much Long Legs made, because that would be probably the nearest thing most recently that's come out in that genre. And even then, like when Long Legs came out, we were all like, oh, I miss these movies.
I mean, Long Legs probably didn't make as much. It doesn't have as wide of an appeal.
Yeah, because it is still a little niche.
But it made $126 million. And these are all, this is coming from Wikipedia, so it's all probably domestic. I don't know what kind of pull Nicolas Cage has internationally.
I feel like Nicolas Cage should have a lot of international pull.
I mean, we all
you
keep
can
saying...
understand him without necessarily speaking his language.
I guess that's true, yeah.
Everybody speaks Nick Cage language.
It's the universal language, Nicolas Cage.
Kester Troy!
I dig this movie. It's been a while since we've watched it. It's also, it's not like 100% like a timepiece for 1999, but it is always...
It was a little bit.
It is always fun to watch computer programs from the late 90s where they were like, we have the highest technology ever made. Yeah. I mean, well, you were saying while we were watching it,
Zoom.
This is the one time it makes sense.
Yes, because he's got voice commands to do things.
Well, he also can't lean forward. He can't be like, let me just take a better look at this. Like, he has to do the enhanced
thing. When they do it in CSI and they're perfectly capable, like, it's a little silly. silly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it made a little bit of sense here. It was still silly.
We only have that kind of technology now, and we're using AI to upscale stuff that's all blurry. Like, it doesn't come out perfect. Like, if you're using AI to zoom in real tight on a fragment of paper.
Oh, you should not use that for crime evidence. No. It'll make up.
Can you imagine?
AI is filling in blanks. We do not want it to fill in blanks on zoomed in shit. But yeah, I've always dug this movie, and yeah. I was really happy with this rewatch because this is one that I've wanted on the podcast for a really long time, uh-huh. So I haven't watched this movie in a long time.
Yeah.
Which was nice because I had sort of forgotten who the killer was.
It's got such a hard title too, right?
It goes hard.
All those Alex Cross movies are like Kiss the Girls. Along Came a Spider. Meanwhile, we come out here, we're like, it's the Bone Collector, motherfucker! Even Seven doesn't have that hard of a title. Dope title, dope cast, dope trailer. I mean it. Rewatch that trailer. That trailer is great. And it also, you know, timepiece-wise has all of the sort of like stuttery frame rate stuff that they started doing in the late 90s, early 2000s, which, you know, love it or hate it.
You know what that always reminds me of? That pirating commercial. Like the...
Oh, yeah.
Like, you wouldn't steal a car. Flash, 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 flash.
And that has become the aesthetic of a new generation. So, what's your rating for... Are we doing ratings still?
Yeah.
I think we are?
Yeah. I'm going to go with a 3 out of 4.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the movie up until, like, the killer reveal.
Uh-oh.
Where I'm just like, yeah, I guess he's fine.
Yeah, but he holds his own in that fight. Denzel can't move, and he manages to fight and kill a man.
It's pretty fucking great that he, like, fucking bites his neck. Yeah, it's great. But I just the stuff I was complaining about earlier, yeah. I just want to know more about the psychology of the killer.
For sure, absolutely.
I just feel like, yeah, the killer we were hunting is smarter than the killer we meet.
Yeah, no, the book will definitely, I would assume, would get into it, because in a book you can have the killer giving a monologue to one of his victims and not know what his voice sounds like or what he looks like.
Well, and also the narrator is like omnipotent, so it can just say things like this, like, like he was feeling this away. Like you get more of a fully rounded view of the situation.
I love imagining the audiobook, which is like, the killer felt this away. But yeah, I'll also...
harvesting the thigh bone.
Am I at 2.75 or am I 3? I don't know. Yeah, I'll also give this movie a 3. It's rock solid. I like a crime thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're right. It's been a while. We've wanted to do this on the podcast for a bit. And like, the trick is always like where to pair it, what to fit it in with. And this new season of the podcast gave us the perfect opportunity to do it because the theme for this new season of Nightmare on Film Street is a total fucking secret.
Yeah, so we are actually keeping it hidden from you. We're just going to release this season week to week like we do. And you have to figure out what the movies have in common. And we'll give you a prize if you guess it right.
Yeah, so instead of doing themes for two movies back to back, the theme is across the entire season. If you are the first person to guess what the secret theme is, you're going to win yourself a Nightmare on Film Street prize pack. And if we get a whole bunch of people that get that guess it correctly, we're going to, you know, pull some names from hats and give out a couple other fun prizes too.
Yeah, and because this is the first time we're doing it, I'm going to give you a little hint.
Whoa.
Don't worry. We're not doing anything super high level. Like, you have to get Nightmare on Film Street niche. Like, we're not just doing, like, oh, these are horror comedies. Like, they have things in common.
believe it or not, and there's some wild picks coming out the rest of the season. All of these movies have something in common. And yeah, you'll find links to send us your guesses, your predictions for the theme in this episode. Just, you know, click on the episode description, find the link, submit your answer. Good luck.
But that's it from us this week. Thank you so much for listening and joining us for this fun new season we've started. We will be hitting you up with another episode next week. But until then, I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Do you like horror movies? Do you like cocktails? Do you like cocktails while you watch horror movies?
Oh boy, do we have a surprise for you. Cocktails from the Crypt is finally here. You can get a copy of our new recipe book, 60 Terrifying Concoctions, inspired by your favorite horror movies, right now, wherever books are sold.
Learn how to make the Drag Mai Tai to Hell, the Negroni Nomicon.
Surprise your friends with a Jason X-inspired slushy.
Get sloshed drinking a Texas Chainsaw Margarita, or six.
And why not blow your brains at the back of your head with the Killbot Kamikaze? Thank you. Have a nice day.
You can learn how to drink. You can. You can learn how to make these drinks and more in Cocktails from the Crypt, available wherever books are sold, like Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay, this infomercial bit has been really fun, but seriously, one, thank you so much to everybody who has pre-ordered a copy of Cocktails from the Crypt. And if you are looking for a gift for the horror person in your life and you have no idea what else to get them, Cocktails from the Crypt is here to help them punch up every Friday movie night and turn it into a graveyard smash.
Plus, the cover's embossed and it looks great on your coffee table.
No, oh, Kim's still stuck in infomercial land, guys. I'm sorry. I think she's gone forever.
It's purple.
You can get Cocktails from the Crypt right now, wherever books are sold. Or you can head over to nofspodcast.com/go. There's links for everything.